Hi, this is Jack Vaughn from Search Data Management, and I'm joined by Ed Scannell, who's the Senior Executive Editor for TechTarget Sites in the Data Center and Virtualization Media Group. And we are joined by Mike Magid, who is the Principal Analyst with Small World Big Data. You know, we'd like to take a look at some of the data things that happened this year. So, you know, Mike, I'm glad you could be with us. I'd like to look at some of the trends in big data this year. I don't know what happened to Hadoop. We covered the heck out of it for many years. We've talked about Spark coming along. Now we just see a big merger, certainly this year, with Cloudera and Hortonworks. And I'm wondering if it says anything about what the future of Hadoop or big data is.
Oh, definitely. This is terribly interesting in the Hadoop space. I think we were talking earlier, Hadoop is now 11 years old as a project, or possibly older. And Hortonworks, being the pure open source version, was always, you know, out there competing with Cloudera, the enterprise-y version, and a few other folks like MapR picking up a more of a customized version. And then you had the, you know, Pivotal and Intel and Microsoft and IBM and a bunch of other folks each had their own distributions.
Every day another distro.
Every day another distro. And over the last couple of years, third-tier distros have dropped off. And interestingly enough, a lot of them have adopted Hortonworks, being the pure open source foundation. It's a pretty safe bet that they can adopt that. So you see folks like, you don't normally expect getting into bed with open source in that fully way, was, or at least Hortonworks getting into bed with them, Microsoft, right? And so the Azure cloud and the whole Microsoft big data thing is really founded on Hortonworks. IBM joins the party and also adopts Hortonworks. And then you see folks like Intel getting into that as well. And so Hortonworks becomes a vastly more important player in the last couple of years simply because they become the Hadoop for the cloud and all the public cloud providers. Cloudera is over there really building enterprise features, data protection and interactive query response time and data management and security things that data provenance and just how do you manage enterprise data the same way we have in the non-big data space and try to bring that into the data space.
And one day they looked at each other and they said, why are we fighting?
Very different business outfits when you look at them, right? One's dressed in shirts and ties and the other one's wearing jeans and Grateful Dead t-shirts for the most part. And but very friendly, right? Those guys all know each other. It's not as hostile as I might make it sound. So when they started talking, realizing, you know, our separate business models aiming at different places aren't really either going to pay off the way we want them to, it made a lot of sense, I think, technology-wise, to fold the stuff back together.
And did they, like the industry as a whole, have to look at cloud and then now competing with the cloud provider, the big one being Amazon?
What's interesting is that you know, Cloudera, the name, wasn't what they did, and Hortonworks was the one that really got into the cloud layer. So now they're bringing it back together. But you can also go to Amazon and run Cloudera. You can run MapR. You can run different Hortonworks versions too. So that's probably a point in Amazon's favor that they're so multilingual in that sense that it's not a matter of pride for them that you have to run EMR when you come to Amazon.
Mere weeks before that merger, I was writing a story about Hortonworks doing a deal with Red Hat and IBM, and they're kind of looking, I think it's fair to say, to rejigger Hadoop to run better on the cloud. And you would know more about that than me, but of course, both those events were followed by the blockbuster IBM Red Hat acquisition.
Right. So IBM definitely said it's not in our favor to have our own distribution of Hadoop. We're going to use Hortonworks under it. To that end, I think they had been looking at technologies that Red Hat has for software-defined storage, things that they can OpenShift, other things they can bring into their cloud, and marry those things together and get Hadoop running in a containerized way and a highly scalable and elastic way. Right from the start. So I suspect that some of those folks knew what they were getting into before we did and were making some of those technology due diligence discussions.
How does IBM benefit from implementing Hadoop?
Well, there's definitely people who want to implement Hadoop, and IBM wants to be their provider.
What's the provider?
Wants to be their go-to team for both, and I said before, on-premise, hybrid, and in cloud. And IBM's goal, in my mind right now, seems to be aiming to say, hey, if there's a commodity piece anywhere in there, we want it, and we want to control it enough so that we can go to our market and say, we can provide you the same experience whether you're on-premise or in the cloud, and then we're going to sell you value-add stuff on top of that, like our Watson and the database, parts that they still have that are proprietary. I mean, look what DB2 morphed into, right? It's a huge, big data database now, and that's still a proprietary piece you would pay to add on top of that.
I'd be interested to find out what can IBM contribute here to this Hortonworth cloud era relationship in terms of AI, machine learning. Watson is out there. Where those two companies stand for AI and machine learning.
I see, you know, Cloudera and Hortonworks providing the data science workbench, sort of the fundamental building blocks of doing AI and machine learning on large data analytics and streaming analytics with Spark, and you bring that world together from here's what's possible and here's the functional building blocks. And I look at IBM and what they've done with Watson is trying to take that to verticals and saying let's build upwards from there and really apply a vertical industry knowledge and build up the base of expertises in that. I could be a little bit off on that. I don't know if IBM's going to contribute a whole lot back to Cloudera and Hortonworks in that direction on the AI and machine learning, because it's a big differentiator. But I wouldn't be surprised to lift the hood and find out they're saying, look, as we deliver Hortonworks and these new things that you might be developing into our cloud, we're going to be happy to open the doors and contribute back, or at least show you how we're managing to do what we're doing in the cloud with your tools so that you can build better foundational tools. And I think that's probably the similar deal they have with Azure and Microsoft too.
I was just thinking that maybe that's a good value add for IBM to provide on top of being a provider, you know, they're not just being a service provider, but some technical value add for that relationship.
The Hadoop project is probably, I don't know, we're probably close to well over 100 different things right now in HDFS.
Apache
Apache Hadoop core. So when we say Hadoop, we're really talking about how do you do scalable compute? How do you bring data? How do you bring compute to the data? How do you partition data sets in a scalable way? And I think what's going to happen is all these technologies that we see merging together are going to get together and say, how do we run these in containerized ways? How do we even make some of these things available in a serverless fashion? And there's small companies like Iguazio that are already stepping into that and saying, hey, we've got a solution already that does big data in a serverless way. So you can already find some signposts on how that might evolve.
A smaller acquisition that kind of is on in that realm is HPE. Recently buying Blue Data, and what's your take on how that relates? This is a company that started out to do virtual machinery for Hadoop and then shifted to containers and finally Kubernetes too.
So Blue Data was trying to help enterprises use their existing storage. So if you had a big investment or big data gravity problem where you had a lot of data in an existing enterprise storage array network, how do you use that and run big data apps on it and analytics? And they said, well, they had some clever way to set a bunch of virtualized compute nodes next to that storage and then virtualize and abstract the data where it sat into there and make it look like HDFS. Fair enough. And I think even though in the intervening couple years they've improve their virtualization platform, they rewrote everything as containers. And so the containerized versions of all these big data analytics, and it's incredibly virtualized and great for a cloud building, perhaps private cloud building. The real technology still is, how do you preserve someone's investment in their expensive storage assets, their enterprise storage assets, and let them still do big data analytics on? I think in some ways, when HPE buys Blue Data, they're still playing this backwards game of how do I extend the life and utility of all those people who bought all our big storage and server farms over the years and bring big data analytics back to it.
So the legacy migration?
Bit of an updating, big legacy migration. And of course, HPE doesn't run their own cloud. So this is really about how does HPE stay valuable and relevant to the enterprise.
Do you have any thoughts on what kind of a year it was for the customers of all these companies in terms of all these technologies?
If I was writing stuff and I stayed pretty close to the open source branches, I'd be smiling because I've just weathered a lot of storms that in the past might not have been so smooth.
Would have left me with an orphan system.
I've been on a database for a company that went defunct. I'd have been on some architecture where it was becoming obsolete, and I have to do some lift and shift stuff. So, if I at least developed in a sort of a core way, I'd feel pretty good about open source right now because there's been a lot of sea changes, and it won't really impact people with those apps so heavily. In fact, I think life gets better for them. On the other hand, if you've really invested a great deal in going to the extreme edges of some proprietary add-on to that, you still have some work to do now, maybe. But I think we still have that proof point of what's IBM going to do with Red Hat when they acquire it, and I don't think they know yet enough to tell us plans. But it wouldn't surprise me that they follow that Dell EMC model you were talking about, Ed, earlier, where it's really, you keep running this. We don't want to disrupt it.
Well, hopefully IBM doesn't have a whole lot of fingerprints on Red Hat over the course of the next couple of years. So let them do what they know how to do best. Mm-hmm. You know, if they start interfering with corporate culture kinds of things, or again yanking the code to its own benefit at the and not towards mm-hmm. the benefit of the open source community, that's going to be a bad thing. But I really think that IBM spending that kind of money, it's just going to leave those guys alone. I think that's going to encourage a lot of larger companies to look favorably on this deal. It could result, I think, in even more sales of products for IBM software that's proprietary as well as open source stuff.
I think the competition has changed. You know, but you see both Microsoft and IBM doing a lot with open source and finding other areas to compete. Ed and I would like to thank you, Mike, for being with us. That's Mike Magid from Small World Big Data. Thanks, everybody, for joining us on the Talking Data Podcast, the last one for 2018. And now for some Talking Data Podcast bonus material.
Yeah, cloud cost management is really, I think, what's holding up a good portion of people implementing their first clouds or getting more aggressive with what they already have in place. They're trying to get all this stuff off of the on-premises onto the cloud. They're realizing and saying, well, we've got to think about this.
Well, you know, serverless too was interesting because everybody got up there said, you know what, it is probably more expensive for the infrastructure because we've got to pay someone else to operate it, and we don't, you know, then they own the infrastructure, so we're renting it. But what we save in operations costs on the staffing side and on the far outweighs them. So we don't even care if our cloud costs double. And I'm sitting in the audience going, you know, when someone says I don't care if my costs double, it's like I know that in 5 years what you're going to do is coming to the table crying your eyes out because you have no ability now to get out of that.
If there's someone higher on the food chain than you that does care, and they're going to fire you.
Yeah, and then you'll be building servers back in your closet in your data center so you can bring some of those serverless functions back that don't cost you anything to run. I can see it coming.
Well, the pendulum we used to look at was. Say, do you work in IT, centralized IT, decentralized IT, or with the line of business? And this is going back to the client server days.
Yeah, right.
And you'd see this thing go this way and then it go that way.
I think we're headed right back to where someone's going to have a stack of little mini servers in their desk drawer running their own little IT in a box under their desk or in the wiring closet again in the business because it's cheaper. You can go buy a bunch of cords.